My name is Rod Wright. I am 53 years old. Today's date is August the 2nd, 2019, and I'm speaking with Al Wright, who is my dad. We are recording this interview in Mount Vernon, Washington.
When?
Today. Tell me a little about yourself, when and where you were born.
I was born in the South. I was born in Los Angeles, California. And
a little bit about yourself?
I was a little guy when I was born. And I don't know. I don't remember much.
That'll be fine. We'll go on to the next question. Who are your parents, and can you tell me about them?
My father was Lewis Wright. My mother was Helen Wright. And I didn't find out until I went into the Marine Corps that my name was Lewis Albert Wright. I always thought I was just plain old Albert Wright. That's what my driver's license said. That's what my Social Security said. That's what my high school college diploma said. But when I went into the military, my mom decided she had better tell me what my full name was. I've never liked the name Lewis, even though I've gotten used to it now.
Can you tell me about where you grew up and what it was like?
Like I said, I was born in Los Angeles, but I primarily grew up in Fresno, California, where it was hot and desolate, and they didn't have any streetcars. But Fresno was my hometown. I went to grade school in Fresno, went to, I think it was Washington Junior High School, which is no more in Fresno. And I graduated from Fresno High School and from Fresno Junior College.
How did you meet your wife?
I had been playing a basketball game with Baptist Church in Oak Harbor, Washington. And after the game was over, I had a good game. I thought I'd see how many points I scored, and I sat down, and there was a beautiful-looking gal sitting right there. And I started talking with her, and she was waiting for her mother to pick her up. They finally were turning the lights out. I said, "Would you like me to take you home?" She didn't have much choice. So I took her home. And I asked her if she'd like to go out again, and she jumped out of my 49 Mercury, slamming the door and saying, "No, I don't want to ever see you again." And so I drove away down Crest. But I was stationed in the Oak Harbor seaplane tower, and Sunday afternoon I was looking through the binoculars down towards her house, and I could see activity there. So I drove down. No, I didn't either drive down. I called the Youngsma home. And of course, the Youngsmas don't spell their names like Americans. But fortunately, there was only two Youngsmas. And the first one was Frank, and the second one was Sydney. So I called Frank first, and I asked if Mary was there. And what I didn't know at that time was Dutchmen like to take a nap at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And he screamed at me, "No, she's not here. She lives at the other place," and slammed the phone down. And I thought, whoa, wee, what's this all about? So I took a chance, called the other, called the other number, and Mrs. Youngsma picked up the phone. I asked if Mary was there, and she said, "No, she was at young people's at church." And I said, "Where's that?" So she told me. So I drove over there, and about that time, the young people were coming out of church, and she saw me, and she almost passed out. So anyway, She was embarrassed in front of her friends. She got into my Mercury, and we went driving around, and we went down to the southern end of the island. And then we started back, and it was getting darker. Of course, it was January. And we had stopped overlooking the bay waters. And then somehow or other, she proceeded to ask me questions about Jesus Christ, of which I knew nothing. And so she shared Christ with me. I said, sure, I would accept him. She wanted me to meet her pastor, so I met her pastor. And the rest is history. She's been following up on me ever since.
How did you propose?
Oh, yes, I remember. We were in the back seat of a... I was driving. Oh, I was driving. And there was a couple in the back seat. Oh, okay. We were driving along. And we'd gone up to Mount Baker. So we were coming back. And we went up on the Burlington Hill. Oh, Bellingham Hill? I don't remember that. But anyway, somehow or other, I must have asked her if she would marry me. And she's only, what, 18?
18 and a half.
And I'm 20, I guess. And she said, oh, I don't know, I have to think about this. So for 2 days, she thought about it, prayed about it, and then she said yes. The biggest mistake she ever made, but the Lord's hand was in it, and we are who we are today.
Can you tell me about what you did for a living?
Well, let's see. After I got out of the Navy, I got a job with Sandia Corporation. And I think it was about 3 months before I was getting out of the Navy, I decided I'd better start seeing what kind of help wanted jobs there were. And so I was looking through the paper, want ads. And I saw this one company, Convair, I think it was, out of San Diego, was looking for technicians, of which I was. And I gave them a call, and they said, no, since you got 3 months to go and we're local, just give us a call back about 2 weeks before you're ready to get out. Okay, thanks. Well, the very next week, I saw in the ads an ad from Sandia Corporation. But the thing that caught my eye was they were looking for people that had graduated from DeBry in Chicago, which was a technical school, or someone who had a Smith Hughes degree. And I thought, well, that's me. I've got a Smith Hughes degree out of California. So I called them up, and I went down to one of the big hotels in San Diego. Mary went with me. Of course, we're married now at this time. I hope you realize. And I told her, well, why don't you just sit down here by the pool and I'll go on up to there. I'll go up to the room. So I went up to the room. I think it was on the 7th or 8th floor. Knocked on the door. And the place was jam-packed with people. So this one man said to me, well, it's kind of crowded here. Why don't we go sit out on the balcony? Okay, fine. So we're sitting out there, and we're just chit-chatting, and he said, wow, look at that beautiful gal sitting down there by the pool. And I looked at him, and I said, well, you have good choice, or however I said it, and made him all stumbling around, because I said, that's my wife. Oh, blah, 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 blah. He didn't know what to say. So he told me I could come for an interview in Livermore, all because of your beautiful mother. But anyway, So I went for an interview with Sandia. Figured they flew me up from San Diego to San Francisco. I went over to Livermore, spent the night there, went in for an interview, and the girl at the desk said, "You're a day late." I says, "What? I'm not a day late." And so I whipped out my telegram, showed it to her, and she said, "Uh-oh." So she called up the supervisor, one of the men who was going to interview me, told him I was there. So he came out, he met me, and he said, "Well, I'm sorry." He says, "That was our mistake then. There was about six of us that were going to interview you." Well, the Lord knew I couldn't get past six guys, but I would have a chance with one guy. So anyway, we're sitting there talking, and I'm waiting to find out what kind of work they do at this place that develops nuclear warheads. And I'm waiting and waiting, and pretty soon he said, "Well, okay." He says, "That's enough." He said, "We'll give you a call if everything went well." And I'm thinking, if everything went well, you didn't even ask me anything. So I left, got on the plane, flew back home, and 2 or 3 weeks later, I get a telegram saying, "Yeah, we like you. If you'd like to come to work for us, I think for $405 a month, we'll set things up for you." So I sent him back a telegram telling him, "Yes, I'll accept." So that's how I got my job with Sandia.
When were you drafted, or when did you enlist?
At the end of the Korean War, I was still in college, and no, I was still in high school, and I didn't want to go into the Army, so I thought, well, I'll go down and join the Navy Reserves. So I went down, and they said, "No, we're filled up, but you can go over to the Marines." So I went over and I joined the Marine Reserves in Fresno. Spent 2 years in the Marine Reserves down at Camp Pendleton. And didn't like climbing around in the mud at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, having to clean my rifle in the dark to pass inspection, blah, blah, blah. So after 2 years, I decided I'd had it. Went down to the recruiting station, asked the guy, "Is it possible for me to get out of the Marine Corps and go into the Navy?" "Yeah," he says, "you've already got 2 years in the reserves. Now you need to get 4 years in the active duty. You can come on into the Navy." So I went into the Navy for 4 years. And then when I got out of the Navy, I still had 2 years that I had to do, but I didn't have to go to any meetings. So that's that.
What were some of the reasons you joined the military?
To stay out of the Korean War.
What is one of your greatest accomplishments in life?
Marrying your mother. And having 7 children.
Can you tell me about what role religion played in your life when you were growing up?
Nothing.
What about later?
I went to, a lady came to the door once during the summertime. I don't know, I must have been in the 5th, 6th, 7th grade, somewhere along there. And she was asking, mom answered the door. She said, "Do you have any children here that would like to go to our Sundays, or to our summer 2 weeks, whatever they called it, schooling?" And mom looked at me and I just shook my head no. And she said, "No, I don't think he'd be interested." And well, if what we're doing is any new people that we pick up, we're offering them a baseball and a bat. And so I shook my head yes. My mom said, "Oh, yeah, he'll come for a baseball and a bat." So I had to go for 2 weeks, got my baseball and bat, and that was the last time I stepped into a church, probably till I met Mary. But my dad had never been in a church in his life. My mom, when her parents died at 15, she quit going to church. So there was no Christianity in our home. Even though, because I had gone to this two-week thing, when Thanksgiving came around, Dad said, well, since you're the one that has Bible knowledge now, he says, why don't you pray for us at Thanksgiving? Not at Christmas, not at Easter, just Thanksgiving. But anyway, what was the question?
What role did religion play in your life and when you were growing up?
I don't understand. So anyway, it didn't play anything in my life. Now, I will say, though, I had about five friends. All five of my friends went to church. Two of them went to Nazarene Church, Jimmy and Leo. And some Sundays I would go with them. Max, he was a Baptist. And his brother Jimmy, he was a Baptist. And then there was a girl that we knew, Esther, and I think she went to the Nazarene Church, I can't remember. But anyway, that was as close as I got to Christianity. I remember telling the guys, Max and Jimmy, and Johnny Nurigian, that's right, he was one of my friends, he went to an Armenian church. When Mom and I were married, I said to him, well, how come none of you guys ever told me about Christ? Well, Al, you had such a temper, we didn't figure that would be a very good subject to bring up. Oh, and then one of the things that kept me from going to church, it was just before I went into the Marine Corps, I think. Jimmy had asked me, why don't you come to this revival that we've got going on? I said, what's a revival? Oh, it's just a fellow comes in talking to our church members. And so I said, okay, fine. So I said, I'll go with you. So I went, and I wasn't paying any attention. This guy was just ranting and raving from the pulpit up there, when all of a sudden he says, and there's a young man down there. He's ready to give his life to the Lord. And Jimmy nudges me. He's talking about you. Me? I slid farther down under the pulpit or under the seats. And guy says, bring that young man up here. And there was about four or five other people up there on the stage. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, what's going on? And they're all saying yes. So I said yes, just to get out of there. And I said to myself, I will never go to a church again in my life. And so when I was in the Marine Corps, when you first joined, you had to go to chapel for the first 6 weeks, and I refused to go to chapel. And there was a couple other guys that refused to go. So they put a couple of MPs in the lobby during the church service to make sure we didn't leave.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see, what kind of role does religion or spirituality play in your life now, and what does it mean to you?
It's very important to me. I think now that, before I got older and older and don't get out much anymore, but it used to be that Mom and I would go out and share Christ with people off of visitors' cards at the Baptist church, and even we took it as a responsibility even at one of the Reformed churches that we went to. I used to enjoy sharing Christ with people, and guys at work knew I was a Christian. Sometimes they would say, Al, would you pray for me? I got this problem. So I would pray for them. Don't know what the Lord ever did with it for those people, but I enjoyed sharing it, Mom and I went through almost a year of evangelism training, which we put to good use, I think.
Sundays, home groups.
Oh, and we led home groups midweek, and I was a Sunday school, adult Sunday school teacher. Oh, and when we were at the Baptist Church in Modesto, where we were fairly new there, and Carla would always say to us when we were driving home, or I'd ask a question, Mom would ask a question, what'd you do in Sunday school? We didn't have a teacher today. Well, this went on for a couple of weeks, and I thought, well, this is ridiculous. So I went to her class. And sure enough, the teacher didn't show up, but this one fellow came in, I can't think of his name now. He was the superintendent of the Sunday school at First Baptist in Modesto. And so he had explained, you know, they were having a tough time with this particular couple. They were going to probably remove him. He said, how would you like to teach this class? And I said, sure, why not? So he says, one of the neat things is that Carla will be going into the sixth grade next year, and you'd be teaching her in the sixth grade, and then you get 3 months off during the summertime because she's going into the seventh grade, and they get sixth graders get promoted. So anyway, I said, okay, fine, I'd do that. And by the time Carla was getting out of the sixth grade, this fellow from Divorce Ministry, well, it's Jim Talley, he had come and he'd asked Mom and I if we wanted to work in the divorce singles ministry. And I said, are you kidding? No, thank you. So then Mom and I were talking, and I said, you know what? If God is asking that man to ask me to work in that ministry, maybe I'd better just go ahead and say yes. So I said yes, so we went into the divorce singles ministry. And we had been through a, what was that called, a 2-7 series? And I had broken, I don't know if it was that one, but I had broken down some material that I called light and power. And what that meant is once you see the light, you get the power. But it was a 14-week course. And it was a course that worked well at the Baptist Church because every quarter they would start over. You know, people could move to a different ministry in Sunday school. But for me, I just started over again. And I think I taught that for a year and a half or something before I got transferred to Southern California. But that was probably one of the best times of my life, teaching that light and power course to guys. Well, not too many guys, primarily women, who had been through divorce. And so Mom interacted with the women. I took the guys. And that was a time of our life, I think, that we enjoyed very much.
Okay, thanks, Dad, for the interview. You did a great job.
Well, sorry. I could have added more, but I didn't know what you wanted.
Well, you're also pretty impressive. We did a lot of different things when we were at First B.
Yeah. First B was a tremendously great